Wasn't it?
Around here, during the first ten.
Kalani and Nelson already get sworn in before the meeting.
Yeah, and I have no notary here. I didn't know if, yeah, we don't have a notary here right now. Could you fill out your packet and send it in to the boards and commission?
Long time ago.
Okay, so that's swearing them in right there. So I tried to contact Sharon with our boards and commission section to talk to her to make sure everyone's sworn in, and I haven't been able to get a hold of her for a week. So I've emailed her and emailed her. I called the office over there just to kind of talk story with them. And from what I am told, everyone that signed their certificate and sent it in, that's swearing them in right there. How we last, when Shia was here, everyone kind of stood up and did it. I think we
that
just.
That was the initial.
That was just for the fun of it, kind of thing. You know? Like, because you guys have already signed your certificates and that they swore you in, so we just kind of did another little thing for photo op and whatnot.
What's up,
Moy?
How you, man?
Am I in the right anywhere or what?
You're in the right meeting.
Right up. Oh, there
he is. Kids, you got to sign me.
She's going to make me an outstanding outdoor guy.
Andrew.
Hey, how are you? It's my coach. I'm going to be an outstanding outdoor guy.
Okay. I already got black
yeah?
Sunday night in the other half. So, like, it's not fair. Why don't they have a men's Kalani outdoor from program?
And he's
going
to be our host. Good, good, good.
Hey,
Bob.
How's my friend?
Good to
see you.
Yeah.
Hey, good job, you guys. You're awesome.
Oh, thank you. Yeah,
it was a general dinner we had.
It's all her.
Yeah. Awesome. Hey, this program, you get total backing now.
Yeah.
Do it again.
Yeah. You got a plan.
Can.
Well, it's life exciting.
Yeah, just in frame.
I always remember you.
Juan, he's always leaving.
Oh, look at this, you.
Tell me about it. I came in last night.
Oh,
no more airplane.
You come where?
Hey, can I come too next year?
Yeah, sure. I'll let you visit.
We need to go to the
I can teach a course.
Okay, we can do that.
But what do you guys program on the hunt?
Although now I have my gun that has the laser. My son said I'm no longer expert. So put this laser on. Okay. And that way I can just put the dots in. Hey, great card.
Pretty much everything's staying the same there.
We're working on the management plan.
You gotta get them first. I went to the Dolphin meeting on Maui. Oh yeah, how are they talking all
I don't know, there was no time frame.
No. Hey,
yeah,
this
one
is what
I'm trying to open the archery area in the moment.
It's
the one on this side, yeah. Right by Little Color Ranch. Part of it is part of the 1,000 acres.
Yeah. There's a good one. Never done it.
At least you guys get meeting over there. What kind of meeting? What's the office again?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What's going on with yelling out?
So you stuck there, man.
I'm ready for retire. I just showed
up. Thank you very much.
Ooh, that's the answer.
Take a picture. It's commitment.
Oh, nothing. Get the bullheaded.
Oh, at least for the next 3 years. After that, Suzanne and I gone. But we'll back you up for 3 more years, at least. Hey.
Can you work on it? Come on.
How come? I thought you guys wanted up.
I got another one. Extra. Yeah, extra.
Extra,
yeah,
extra. Be here, extra, just in case. Is Edith coming?
No. This is a bad timing for me.
Well, I suppose they have it.
We should start a big job.
So, Canelo, this outdoor women thing is...
That was my...
Right, that was dumb.
That's what you want. You want her.
I don't want extra.
She just committed for another 5 years. 5 years.
Wrong pocket.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hey, we got a job picture as a new opinion.
Glennon's girlfriend, she took part, and she loved it. She's the administrative director for the judiciary. I think I'm closer. Unless you know, take showers or something, you know? I thought Mike took a shower.
Thank you, everyone, for coming today. It's the 13th meeting. This is Jason Omek, Division of Forestry and Wildlife. Starting a little bit after 10. Ryan Kohatsu, other commission member, will be here in just a few minutes. What I did provide to Nancy up there is the agenda, and also if we want to move some things around, because Ryan won't be here for a little bit. Just to start, I know there's a few things that need to take place right off the bat, and that's one is elect the new chair for the commission, and we can kind of go down through there. And as we go, if you guys have any questions on agenda items, whatnot, feel free to let me know. I guess from here, we can start the meeting.
You're the chairman pro tem, are you?
No.
Oh, you? Chairman pro tem, okay. Board members, I would like to ask both Stanley and Nancy if you both are willing to serve as leadership, then I would like to nominate one of them to be chair and the other to be vice chair. Okay. Is it okay with you guys? You okay for being chair first?
No, Stanley be chair.
Stanley?
He's here longer.
Okay.
Can you, okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
A second.
Okay.
Quickly, your session.
So, as pro tem, I would call for vote. Are there any, is there a second?
Second.
Okay. There's a motion to elect Stanley as chair and Nancy as vice chair. Are there any further nominations? If not, ready for the vote? All those in favor of the nomination of Stanley as chairman and Nancy as vice chairman, raise your hand. Those opposed? Elected, all yours now.
All Stanley.
Oh, all Stanley.
All mine now, okay. That was simple enough.
You can start with
introductions.
Okay, so
here.
Thank you for electing me. Yeah. Okay, let's move item two to after Ryan comes in. So maybe we put that after number 10 for now. Is that okay with you guys? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So let's defer that item. Okay, so. Introduction. Now we can do that. Nelson, you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Nelson Rapunat from Molokai.
Stan Rudis, Lanai representative. Kalani Nakoa from Maui.
Nancy Timkoa Oahu.
Bob Masuda, First Deputy Chair's Representative.
And Josiah Oahu.
Audience?
Jason Owick, Division of Forestry and Wildlife, here as staff.
Kanala Scroat, DOFA, West Hawaiian Big Island, staff.
Jason Misaki, Oahu, DOFA.
Marisol Tall with the Oahu Forestry and Wildlife.
Sarah Dillman with DOFA, staff.
Mara Baker, student at the University of Hawaii, the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Management.
Savannah Sahara, same student at UH, bio major and German major.
Crystal Lizardi, also a veteran major at Manoa.
And Hino, student at UH Manoa.
I'm a student at NMA.
I'm Momi, a wildlife major.
Andrew Choi, on the Hunter Education Program, and here's staff.
Aaron Ugura, Hunter Education Program.
Jim Cogswell, DOFA Wildlife Program Manager.
I'm just here watching.
Charlotte Schauber, Missile Defense Agency.
Jamie Elliott, Missile Defense Agency.
Thank you for coming here.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, everyone. Item four, we will also defer that if there's no objection to after item 11. Okay. Okay, next item is discussion on proposed missile defense project at, how you say that, Kualakala?
Just, this is Jason Omekdofa. We had some questions on the project on the North Shore of Oahu. So the military gave a talk at a neighborhood board meeting in Waianae, and I had just asked them to come to just give a little overview of the project and where they are at, so we can kind of understand, you know, the steps that may happen in the future or kind of what's in front of us.
So Josiah, I don't know if you want to do a quick talk.
This is one of the items that I requested with Jason them, and I think I did meet them at the Waianae Neighborhood Board meeting. And I think the reason why I brought this item up was particularly more from the community standpoint of, the transparency of it all. This thing has been in operation, has started for over a year and a half, and yet the community is wondering why hasn't anybody from the DLNR reached out towards the community. And that's the specific reason, not necessarily the project, but the land use that is being utilized upon the GMA. So I think that's where more of the questions arise, where when would it have become the time for DLNR to step forward. And I say that speaking only as a commissioner, but as a community member and as a representative of the Nala Hele Council, who, of those three, the only time the subject has come up has been through myself bringing it up. And I think that's what the community's concern is about, because we are grateful that they're coming up, and a lot of people kind of see that, and they perceive that as being more reactive from the department. So I understand that we're all here, we haven't been in common that we want to have game management, we want to have good management of the resources. And so this concern is coming up, because how can we going forward, you know, allow the transparency to be here with our community? As she did speak on, as she might, and the neighborhood board, they're talking about there in step four with public hearings. Step one is identifying the sites. So many of the community is asking why weren't they at least notified, although it's a proposal from the landowner or the steward of the land, to DLNR. And that's really the question I gotta go back and take. Why weren't they informed last year when it first happened? We understand that they did come out to Waianae last year in like June,
And at that point, I would want to highlight that a few of them did not even know that that was a public hunting area. And it was only apparent to them because I've spoken up to them. And so we know that they're in talks with DLNR and DOFA. And again, the community wants to know why we're there being pointed into the direction to let the community know.
So if you're willing, we'll provide a quick overview so everyone can get a baseline of what the project is and what we're proposing to do. So, and then we can talk specifically about the concerns from the community. We have some storyboards up here. It was just kind of easier than doing handing out to everyone. But as we said before, we're from the Missile Defense Agency. And we're an organization, a research, development, and acquisition organization as part of the Department of Defense. We are we develop systems that are used by the warfighters to defend the nation from ballistic missile attack. And recently, that's actually kind of grown into other forms of missile technology that we see being developed from adversaries. Mainly, you know, we point towards North Korea when we look at those that are threatening. But there's development by other nations, China and Russia as well. We build systems such as Aegis destroyers. We put on systems on those platforms to help provide that type of defense. What we call THAAD, the Terminal High Altitude Area Defense. It's an Army system. We also are the folks that operate the sea-based X-band radar, which is that big golf ball that sits on a semi-submersible orbital platform. You've probably seen it in Pearl Harbor recently. It came in for a couple months of maintenance. So those are the types of systems we work on. We are charged with ensuring that the warfighters have the capacity to defend the nation. So that's what we do. I'm an engineer with the program. Jamie here is with our environmental team. And so we've had a series of folks come out over the past couple of months. And as Josiah said last year when we started this effort, but in 2018, we were given the direction by Congress under the National Defense Authorization Act to procure a radar for the defense of Hawaii. So part of what this system is looking at doing is to augment the current system of defense for Hawaii. And those of you that don't spend a lot of time looking at ballistic missile threats, as we do, you might not be familiar with what we have as our defense already. But we do have a system of sensors that are in the architecture that would see a ballistic launch. So if a country like North Korea were to launch an attack, we have sensors located on satellites that would see a very hot flash of a launch. We also have radars that are stationed in Japan that would be the first sensors to see a threat coming in the direction of the U.S. At that point, we have some other sensors in Alaska, and we also have, as I mentioned, the sea-based X-band radar, which is at sea currently in the Pacific. And when she's on station, she's helping to ensure that any type of threat that would come toward Hawaii, we would be able to recognize it, be able to classify it, and then be able to launch a response for it. And that response includes what we call ground-based interceptors. They are these very large missiles. They sit in silos in Alaska and in California. And kind of what you're seeing here is that red threat, if we were to have an actual launch, the response would be coming out of one of those missile silos in Alaska or California. Those missiles need information to be able to understand where it would intercept that nuclear warhead. To get that information directly to the interceptors, we rely on those sensors, that architecture, and we provide updates in flight. The proposed radar that we're looking to build in Hawaii would be able to see a complex scene. So when you have a ballistic threat that's flying, it actually is spending most of its time in space. And in that flight, there's a cluster of debris and other clutter that makes it difficult to understand what the nuclear warhead is versus just junk. So a radar in Hawaii is designed, or the purpose of it would be to understand where that actual threat object is amongst all that other debris, so that that interceptor that's flying from Alaska has the right target in mind when it's going up into space to intercept it. And when we look at Hawaii, it's in a unique position because it's so far away from CONUS, from the continental U.S. We need sensors that are located closer here to be able to see the scenery. And that's why we were given the mandate by Congress to build this radar, specifically to defend Hawaii. So that's really the project here. As we mentioned, we've been out here for about the last year or so doing the EIS, the Environmental Impact Statement, working through the cultural, archaeological, and biological surveys. We had looked at candidate locations potentially on both Kauai and Oahu. And the reason for that is that when we look at the performance of this radar, we really need it to be on the western end of the Hawaiian Islands to be most effective. So we started a siting study that looked at all DOD property on Kauai and Oahu, and pointing out the ones that would be feasible to actually construct. And so there are some criteria for that, looking at DOD property and existing military installations that would have the network of infrastructure, security, and other types of things that we looked at, the amount of available land to build, and then to ensure that the performance of the radar, it can't sit somewhere behind where there would be obstructions in its field of view. So with that, we narrowed it down to three sites that are on block. So there's one site at Kualoa Ridge, and that's the one that we're going to specifically talk about today. But there are two other sites on the Kahuku Training Area, which is an Army property. So the site would look sort of like this. And this notional layout is to show you that the radar is at the very bottom of this complex, but it's about a 60-acre complex because this radar is very large. It's roughly 80 to 90 feet in height. And the radar is a massive face that consists of smaller panels of arrays that are transmitters and receivers. So the energy comes out through that array face at the very bottom. But it needs support infrastructure and machinery buildings to support this this radar. So that is why it's on a pretty large 60-acre property, and also to ensure that the security around the perimeter of this can be maintained. So a 60-acre property, roughly the number of buildings here, about a dozen buildings or so, they do everything from cooling to power production to communications and that uplink that I talked about to the missile itself. So we need all of those elements to make this radar successful. So as part of our continuing to look at the viable sites here, we've been out surveying in these areas. We need to understand the conditions of the land so we would know how to construct at these sites. We've been doing some of those surveys, and specifically up in Kualoa Ridge, we've already done about 10 geotech boring holes to determine the seismic and soil composition up there. So we'll talk about specifically Kualoa Ridge, because that's one of importance, I think, to this committee, this commission. So one of the areas that we did look at as far as DoD property on Oahu was next to the Kona Point Satellite Tracking Station, which the Air Force currently operates. They have missions up there that talk to satellites in space, the communications network. So when we looked at that property, it seemed pretty ideal in terms of having the very open field of view to the northwest. And as I mentioned, the threats that we're kind of looking at, North Korea is really primary in this discussion. This radar would be boresighted, we call it boresighting, but the centerline beam of this radar would point towards North Korea. So it's in a northwest direction from Hawaii. And it would look about 60 degrees either way of that center line. So when we look at an area that would be feasible to build, we would need that, again, uncluttered field of view in that direction. So this site up there worked for the operational performance of the radar that we needed. It was next to existing Air Force property. But as Josiah mentioned, a majority of the compound would actually sit on state of Hawaii land, just over to the side of it. So on this diagram here, what we attempt to show is that the green area is what's currently Air Force Satellite Tracking Station controlled property. And then just north of that is the area of state property in the yellow there. The actual overall compound is in, it's lighter blue, it's hard to kind of see that boundary definition, but that would be the permanent facility. And as part of that, the actual radar compound that we showed you earlier would be a smaller portion of that. But this would allow us to do all the mission, the essential support for the radar within secure boundaries that we would need for this type of a military installation. The other area behind it that's in crosshatched is what we would need for construction laydown if this were developed as the site. That's to allow us to have the right equipment, construction materials, and everything else needed for construction, and not have to basically to put it in a centralized location so we could construct. So that part of this property, if we were to seek this as the location to build this, and if the state were to allow us to lease that land, that part of the property would go back to the state once we were done with construction. So that's the theme behind the site here. I will note that during our archaeological surveys, we did find in both references and in actual ground surveys that there are some significant cultural sites up there. This box here in the magenta, that is Moka'ena Heiau. So that was identified, as well as another site called TS1 in the circled magenta. And that is still under, I would say, discussion with those folks that have claimed to know what it was historically used for by Native Hawaiians. But we have been talking with folks in that area to understand what the importance is of those sites. So taking that in, and I know Josiah will say, the hunters have equally as valid concerns up there, and we probably haven't done enough discussion yet with you on what those specific areas here are that you may you know, find as your places where you practice traditional cultural practices. But we aim to do that, and that's why on Thursday night we're going to be back in the Waianae area to talk to your committee specifically on what your concerns are in this area. But we understand that this is identified, and we need to discuss it. So. Thank you for the time on that, and if there's any questions that I can take quickly tonight.
Hey, I want
to... Let's start with Josiah and work our way down with questions for commissioners.
I think just what it started with was like from the DNR perspective, when would they have began, or why has it not been communicated to the community about this area, this proposed site? And then also, is there stuff... being talked about to help offset should they choose this site?
I'm happy to address that, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, sir.
First, I want to thank the folks from MDA because when they approached us, we had at the very beginning discussion talks about our concerns, two concerns. One, we thought this would be a good site because of existing Air Force facilities there. And it might be better to be adjacent to an existing science facility rather than create another area. Two, we expressed, we shared our concerns about existing health, some of our hunting requirements. And the MDA folks engaged local council, cultural council, as well as their own staff, one of whom is a local girl, who we appreciate, and got it right away. So from the very beginning, Josiah, contrary to what you're implying, there was concern about engaging the community. So they, as part of that early process, because this is a working process, in progress, hopefully. They arranged, you guys did meet with the neighborhood board?
We met with the full board in Waianae 2 weeks ago. And
okay. Yeah. So that's an early part of the process.
So what was that meeting? I'm sorry, go ahead, sir. I didn't want to interrupt.
No, ask your questions. Because I want to answer your questions because the implications you make sometimes are very disinforming. And so I think we need to have clear and accurate information.
And again, so the last year meeting was a meeting last year in June, and was that meeting, how would that differ from the meeting 2 weeks ago?
Yes, okay, so that was a scoping meeting, that part of the environmental impact study, we are required to open up discussions about what the proposed project is, and so that was specifically as, a scoping meeting. To the Waianae Neighborhood Board, that is more public information, and not necessarily a requirement by the EIS, but the intention is to spread the word of what the project will consist of. And I know that it's been a long time between those two meetings. So in that time, as Bob has talked about, we've tried to hire local consultants to help identify the groups that we should be meeting with. So we've been doing a lot of smaller group work to lead up to coming back with some answers to help understand the problem first, and then to try to come back with some proposed solutions for that. Now, specifically to the hunters, though, you're right. We have not had a lot of dialogue to this point. And we recognize that there needs to be more discussion, and that's why we're committed to come back this Thursday to meet with you and to talk about potential offsets to the acreage that we would take up there and what we can do about ensuring access for the duration of the installation, and then in the short term, if construction were to proceed there, what we would do in that interim.
And we do appreciate what you're doing, and we've been following it, and I've been following it for a while, and I think the concern, again, is not the project itself, but it's again, the land and the appearance of DNR in these meetings, whether it's last year and throughout it all. And that's where my perspective is.
Right, and I'm answering you. This is part of the process. DNR is not driving the process. We're consulting with the people who are initiating and on behalf of our national defense, engaging this process. Our requirement is that they engage the community, they engage the cultural importance, and they're doing that. We haven't met with them in getting their report on everything. We have met in terms of looking at optional areas. We've given our feedback and observations on each of the optional areas, and they're engaging that process. So right now, they're at the beginning of the process, engaging each other communities, and when they get through that, they'll come and talk to us, give us their sense of what would make sense and what would be doable, and then at that point, we'll take a look at what needs to be done from our part to make possible or decide is impossible on each of their potential recommended areas. So why would we go to you guys without any information? We're waiting for the information so we can talk to our community.
I'm just looking at, because it's the land, and I'm hearing what you're saying, and their paper kind of reflects this, and it shows that they're on step four, and what we got from a lot of the community that this has passed out. And although they're on step four, public scoping and meetings, step one is identify sites now. The people that ask me to ask these questions are questioning the land part of the project, and when would the land. So if you're saying that they are doing the outreaching on behalf of DLNR about the land, then I can understand that.
They're doing their outreach on behalf of the project.
So who's doing the outreach for the land?
They're inquiring with the community, the community's sense, and getting feedback from each of the communities. If we went to the community, we would be asking the community on behalf of MDA. We think it's better for MDA to directly engage the community.
So who directs them to who to talk to within the community?
Well, they have a cultural consultant that identifies neighborhood boards and other cultural groups, and that's what they're going down step by step. So because you have information more than the general community, you know, you could ask us what's going on, and we'd be happy to tell you. There's nothing that's being, everything's transparent. As far as I'm aware, I'm waiting for the MDA folks to give us their assessment. So if there's anything we need to do on whichever of their choices makes sense, we'll engage that.
And let me offer that. I think part of, you know, our conversation at the neighborhood board was the community wasn't hearing enough frequent feedback. And so part of that is we've been trying to collect information from people that are interested in hearing about this project, and then also identifying consulting parties on the EIS. So I think we're kind of, you know, maybe a little bit late to doing that, but that is what we're trying to do in this phase right now as we're doing this public outreach, and we're visiting other neighborhood boards as well, and trying to gather that list of folks that are, you know, should be consulting parties for this project.
So I just want to make sure that when I go back, it's clear to them. And what I'm hearing is, at this point in the process, DLNR wouldn't step in. Now, there's a step down the road of this process in which DLNR will come forward and start.
If the MDA decide that the best choice of all the choices would include state land, then DLNR would work with them in engaging the community to inform the community and engage them in terms of the use of that land.
So as in my perspective, I see as the Oahu Commissioner, as a liaison for the Oahu community representing this commission which is enacted, I would say that this is the kind of process that gives people a negative perspective upon DLNR as a commissioner, because we're a year and a half in, people have yet to know about it. They would want DLNR because when they only look at their site as DLNR, this is a game. So as a commissioner, I'm just suggesting, you know, and I'm highly, you know, hoping.
So what information would you feel should have been shared up prior to this point?
I think when you get identifying the sites, DLNR should have at least addressed one of the commissioners and let us know. I think the Na'alahele Council, which is also a major land user, not only the hunters but as recreational use, should have been known about them. It was upon the Waena Neighborhood Board committee agendas and there was a representation. So I think it's just, you know, common courtesy. If you're gonna build a big shed behind your neighbor stuff, you're gonna have, you know, this thing coming up, you know. I don't have to let you know.
Wow.
Because I got my permits and stuff, and necessarily I can let you know when we first started the construction.
Well, I think it's also a common courtesy. If you had that concern, you could have called. I mean, you know, you could have called. What I'm trying to engage you on now is I don't want to have our public get subject to misinformation on whether we did or didn't do the right thing. We feel we need to understand what their direction is going to be as before we engage the community. I'm not going to go to a community and say there's a possible engagement of this area for this reason when we don't know. And so if you, at your point of understanding that this may or may not happen, have a concern, you're free to call and ask us, where is this? I can tell you where it is. What part of the process are we in?
So
we're happy to answer that.
But what about the community members who do not have the information? They're left in the blind. Like, isn't it somebody's, like as you said, it's my responsibility because I know to call and make that, but what about those who don't know? And the DLNR who do know, is it the department's responsibility to reach out to the community, or is it the community's responsibility to find what's going on and reach out to the department?
I think it's the department's responsibility to initiate the engagement with the community on a discussion on possible projects. Yes.
This is a possible project.
That's at the point at which we understand it's a possible project, we'll be happy to engage the community. We are represented at the neighborhood board. You could have asked at the neighborhood board. You know what I'm saying?
No, I'm sorry, I don't follow.
Well,
can I interject real quick?
Sure.
Okay, I guess, you know, if we look at the big picture here, there's a lot of things going on in Hawaii right now, okay? And if you look at what brother's trying to say as far as community-wise, a lot of things have been just pushed past the community, mm-hmm. and things have been, you know, a lot of things have happened that the community, especially even the Hawaiian community and the long-standing people that live in Hawaii, have not been, you know, stuff has been kind of slid under the table. Not talking about this project in general. My point is this, the temperature of how things are right now is very volatile. You guys are aware of all the things going on. So right now the community as a whole, it's any little things that are happening is an issue. So it's like when bees nest, right? If things happen that they feel is an issue, then it's going to rile up the people, right? So I guess what he's trying, you saying, I understand the transparency is nice that you guys coming out and saying that. So it's more information wise, you know, allowing, you know, like brother can be one liaison with the whole process so that he can let the community know exactly what's happening. No more all the information there. That's why I never come out, nothing much. You know, all these other things never happened yet. But it's in the process and all of that. So just having that information to pass on, you know, and understanding of what's happening.
I totally agree with what you're saying.
Okay.
I don't disagree.
Okay, can I just want to interject because I did attend the MDA information programs that you had last year. I went to the one in May at Keihi Lagoon, and I believe 2 days later you had a meeting in Waianae with your presentation that showed all three possible sites. I talked to numerous people, none of which were aware that there was game management area involved and that we might lose that. I talked to Marigold. I set up a meeting and talked with Marigold, but I also understood that you were in the process of your EIS and that nothing had been decided yet, but I'm still following as to where it's going. So I think the issue was the announcement about those meetings was like this big in the Star Bulletin, and their readership probably is very little. Okay. So I think the announcement for your program needs to be television, radio, where people are listening. Because
that's fair. Other modes of communication these days.
Right. I mean, they did not. I'm still on the fence about it, but they did their part. Yeah. It was just maybe the community just didn't see the information in the paper.
Has it been in the media, TV media?
It has been recently.
On the news and stuff.
On the news. That wasn't explicitly by our viewing, but it has been brought up. But part of us going out to the neighborhood boards is to start to, you know, spread the word at the local level. And, you know, again, because we're still in the EIS and we're going through the surveys, we don't have enough information to put out publicly at that level to media yet. And, you know, as we do get that information, we'll be able to do some of that more, the broader type of engagements.
And as you get that information, you share it with us, and we work within the system to work with the neighborhood boards that are involved, the legislators who are involved in that community and all of that.
So
there is a process that we would fully engage. You know, I mean, believe me, yeah. If anybody is sensitive about what's going on now, we are. I live on the Big Island. Half my neighborhood is up.
Well, I just think, you know, we see what happened in front of us right now. Yeah. So,
yeah.
I mean, we also understand the importance of what you guys are doing. You know, we understand that as an you know, whichever way we like look at them, we understand how important that is. So, you know, on the flip side, us as Hawaiians, you know, it's an issue. I mean, we can try not want to address it, but, you know, we have our own issues with it, or with things. But I also think communicating together, get brother involved where he can, you know, go back to who his constituents, whoever that is, you know, and you guys coming forward. I think it can happen. You know, it's just information got to be out there for people. Not everybody has that information at hand, right?
Yeah.
So I think if people can be informed, we understand, you know, he can sit on with his group, whoever that needs to be, then, you know, I think we can,
yeah, we
process can be
lifted. We totally support that process.
Yeah,
My issue, and Josiah and I have an ongoing issue, mm-hmm, that precedes your being exposed to it.
Sure.
And part of that is how we communicate with each other. And, you know, we've been open to receiving communication as well as passing it out.
Sure.
What I resent as a local boy who believes in justice,
sure,
for Hawaiians and whose neighborhood is all totally involved in the current situation, and who is in a position where, because I took an oath of office, I cannot express my personal feelings and sense of outrage. I just shut up on those things. Let me just share that I'm not the kind. You know, I was born and raised in Kakapo. I'm not going to stand by and have somebody run over me.
Of course.
And I do not like misinformation being used to create a perception that is inaccurate. And I'm trying to get an accurate perception of what's going on.
I think that's why we're here, right?
That's right. And I appreciate your comment.
Thank you.
Okay. So, anytime you hear anything, just I call. We're here to take your call. We have never not taken your call. So if you hear anything that you don't have the information that you think you should have, call. And if I know, I'll let you know. And if I don't know, I'm going to let you know that too.
Right. I think so. I've had enough information about this to kind of make that sound decision, and in my perspective. But no, I thank you for the open door always, for allowing that. And yeah, that's pretty much all. Other than that, we do know that should they choose this site, there would be a lot of acreage loss. And I rest assured at the fact, like you said earlier, that Dylan and I are in talks about offsetting that game management area. And maybe one thing DMR can find out that was never discussed was, in addition to the 100 acres or 100, between 50 and 80 acres, or 150 acres during construction, and probably about 65 acres during the actual station, should it be chosen there, what is the buffer zone of that? We understand right now that the Air Force is 250 yards off of the road. But at the same time, we got other roads that are adjacent to public hunting area that are a quarter mile. So that would have to be rolled into that as well.
You know, Mr. Chairman, I think as a fair kind of thing, and as a just process, you know, we need to get the people who should be involved. So if there's a hunting area involved, Josiah represents Oahu. He needs to be meeting with our DOFA people on Oahu and being in the discussions around if there's offsetting areas where and all that. You should know the better places. Nancy probably knows that too. And if you're willing to be engaged in helping in that process, I would encourage you folks to do it together.
I totally agree. And I think they are. I'm not here to say they're not. I think the thing that was kind of revolving back is at what point that the discussion happened. I think Jason and Marigold have been always, as a wildlife manager, discussing things of that sort. But I just think at what point that discussion happened.
Whatever point you guys think is the right point, you guys decide. It's not, you know, you guys don't have to come to the chair's office for those kinds of decisions. We're going to call on you folks, both the DOFA wildlife team and DOFA management, as well as those of you who sit on game management areas or hunting club or cultural organization, to be involved. That's why they have a cultural consultant who is well-known and well-respected in Hawaii, who knows the organization, and you folks should depend on that person to make recommendations for engagement. You know, we want the people, from a leadership point of view, we want the people who know the ground operation to be most involved in the discussion, not the guys stuck in a damn office.
Okay. You got anything, Nancy? Anything more?
No.
Kalani?
No.
Thank you.
Okay. I got nothing. So at this moment, let's open public testimony. Anyone want to testify, can come up to the chair.
Is there a process that you guys have, a schedule of all your meetings coming up?
So we can certainly put that out. And one of the things we are doing now is we're activating a website that's going to have upcoming meetings posted. And then we took that feedback from the Lanai Neighborhood Board. So that should be live here in the next week.
I would suggest you set up meetings specifically with appropriate people, including, you know, Marigold is our point with you guys.
Yeah.
The hunting game management issues, and then keep Stanley in the loop as chair and Nancy as vice chair on what kind of meetings are going on. If you want to send to all the commissioners, fine.
Okay.
But and then also the cultural groups that you guys are meeting with, the community groups, and then keep it all out there.
Okay.
With that being said, there is a meeting tomorrow, right, at the Waianae Neighborhood Board that she will be attending, and anybody else who want to represent DLNR is welcome to attend. It's the Land and Natural Resource Committee meeting.
We want to do the right things.
We do.
And we know how critical our national defense is, especially with crazy people out there. So it's not, you know, against that. It's the process and how well we do it. So we would engage from the DLNR point of view, we'd encourage more than less.
Yeah.
And more people involved than less. Because our greatest enemy right now in the community is misinformation, disinformation, a lack of respect, you know, and a lack of acknowledgement of what history has been or not been. And we need to get above that.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Deputy. So then again, anyone want to come up? Second chance? Last chance? Okay, at this time, public testimony is closed. Any further discussion, commissioners?
Okay,
thank you very much.
And I want to thank Josiah for bringing up his issues.
Okay, and then, so next item number six. Discuss update on the wildlife management plan. Oh, you got something?
Ryan's here. So.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Ryan, please introduce yourself.
Oh, Ryan Komatsu, East Hawaii, representative for GMAC.
Okay. So, who's giving that?
I can speak on behalf of that item.
Okay.
Through last meeting, there was some discussion. Again, this is Jason Omick, DLNR, DOFA admin. There was some discussion on the Lanai management plan and future lease for the area, for the game management area that Lanai and Lanai. At this moment, we've contracted someone to assist us in writing a steering document that will be part of the plan for the island.
We hired H.T. Harvey and Associates. They kind of work on the mainland and here in Hawaii. The funding for this project, we wrote a grant to WSFR, Wildlife Sport Fish Restoration Program, and they funded this grant. So those monies were encumbered. The contractor was hired. We're in the beginning stages of right now gathering historical data, all pre-existing data for the area, cultural data, wildlife data, teeny data, and kind of reviewing all that information and developing a management strategy for the area. This document will kind of drive information for the management plan and give outlooks for 5 to 10 years on kind of a scope of work on how we're going to manage the area for all different reasons, hunting and native ecosystem protection. So that's in the works right now. We'll have a draft in September, maybe a little bit before September. I have to look at the dates, but we'll have a draft soon, and I can, or within a few months, 4 or 5 months, I can provide update on that draft once I get it. We will have a finalized product before our lease is over, so we can continue negotiations with Palom and Lanai. And that's pretty much it. It took us a few months to kind of just get moving, getting the money into the account over here and going through the contract process. So that's moving forward. And that's pretty much all I have as far as an update for the Lanai management plan.
Oh, right on, Jason. Thank you.
Yeah.
Any discussion, commissioners?
Proposed timeline on completion.
While we're waiting,
yes, go ahead,
Mr. Chair. I would like to share.
Yes.
Some time ago, a couple months ago, so we met with the Lanai company management people and their new environment officer, and they shared with us some of their plans. You know, Lanai, the northern flats, the coral reef, has all mud and usually red from the runoff on the gulches on the northern, the north-facing slope. Yeah. So they're engaged actively in a fencing project and in a reforestation project in the gulches to try and keep the mud from sliding down.
That's on the eastern side.
Yeah.
Yeah, not on
east,
the not on the GMA side.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So they're working actively on that. I just wanted to share it because it does involve managing game.
Yes.
And keeping out of that area so that we can restore, and we're going to be working with them eventually on a shoreline restoration kind of stuff. So once we can get that mud out of there, I think it'll make for a healthier estuary kind of thing.
Yep.
Yeah, we have the draft. This is Jason again, Omek DOFA. The draft steering document will be to DOFA on January 31st, 2020. We'll have 30 days to comment on that. The second draft of the steering document will be due by June 30th, 2020. That'll go through a 2-week review before being finalized. And then the entire project will be completed by September 30th, 2020. And the grant basically end date is December 30th. So if anything, you know, it shouldn't be extended past September 30th, but 2020 should be the final document for that. And as we go through our review process, we can
have to be a board approved EA or something like that, I know.
Well, once we enter into the full blown management plan, yes, we'll go down those that avenue. Right now it's kind of addressing all the topics that need to be developed to even develop a management plan. So this is gonna be a steering document on what's gonna be happening on the ground, how we're gonna be managing these areas from the output of those duties. We'll be able to start actually getting a full-blown management plan together, which will enter that arena.
And a past EA, which was the next item of full on, I'm not going there, but they had a it used to have an intent of what the EA was trying to accomplish. Mm-hmm. Is there an intent for what this EA or what this study accomplishes?
Well, right now, the intent for this is to gather all pre-existing data that's available for us on everything from species to how the land is being used, economic value, all these things. So it's really like doing your homework to gather everything that's occurring on this parcel, and then from there, you know, you look at your levels of management. And so, am I answering your question?
Because it is a grant-funded, I'm assuming a sportsman-related funded thing, does it have any intent or priority toward continuing the hunting program, or is it an environmental priority?
This is to continue the hunting program and understand how we need to manage our native species and huntable species on the island. And this is a planning document anyway, so you don't have to go through that EA process quite yet. Once we start implementing these actions, yes.
They need an EA even to operate this on part of the land?
No, I mean, like, once we go, if we are asking federal money to implement, to not just do planning, but we're actually doing on-the-ground work, yeah, I mean, there's compliance that has to be done for that.
Okay. And this comes with the minimum, a 10-year extension or something because of the federal money?
Yeah.
Okay.
We have a Lanai representative for, and on GMAC, as well as the Lanai company folks that, so our consultant will be engaging them.
Yes, he'll be engaging with all parties. It's still in the beginning stages, literally. Contract.
I just want to make sure we get them involved right up front.
Yep. That's all I have for the Lanai game management area update.
Anyway, any else? Anything else, commissioners?
No. That East Lanai, that project, whatever.
Yeah.
Isn't it just 20,000 acres of eradication as well?
Well, they're still discussing what they're gonna do. Right now, the RFP is out for, I guess, anyone who wants to put in from erosion studies to invasive studies to whatever. I guess then they can compile what they're gonna do after. So a little bit of history on that one is Ellison is putting in $500,000, $500,000 per year, and NIFWIF, how you say that?
NIFWIF,
yeah. They're matching that by another $500,000, and they're running the process. But yeah, that's on the east side. So as far as the hunting goes, they're still trying to figure out whether it's fencing on the top of the ridges, or even putting fences on, in there. Controlling the ungulates down to 25% or whatever is a good percent to have still on the land to control the vegetation. Trying to protect the gulches from erosion from Mauka to Makai. And that's the whole concept, is to take care the mountain before you can take care of the reef. So that's what it is.
Yeah.
So anything else, commissioners, on this? Okay, at this time, I'll open up public testimony on this item. Okay, seeing there's none, public testimony is closed. Any further discussion? None. We're moving on to next item. Who's doing it? You doing that, Jason?
Do we have an update on why you came with the management plan?
You want me to do it?
Yeah, I'll let you do it.
Yeah, I wasn't ready.
Nah, I'm not.
No, it's okay. Canola Sprout, Westway Wildlife Biologist. Just a quick update. We met with, so we have a county game management advisory commission, which is kind of the genesis of you guys. So we met with one of the commissioners, the chair, Nani Pogline, yesterday, and Ryan was there, and another hunter, Ike, was there as well. And so there was a game management plan for the island that was drafted in 2010, is when it was supposed to go into effect. And we had committed to, like, a couple years ago, Shia, who was our game management program coordinator for the state, updated that draft, that game management plan for them, and they didn't like her updates, so we are trying to work with them to get a better, something that is acceptable, I guess, to them. One of the problems with the plan was there were a lot of actions in there that we're not allowed to do, that is against our laws and our mandates. And so we sat down and explained that to Nani and Ryan and Ike yesterday. And so we basically said, we're going to keep that old plan as kind of an appendix and come up with something a little more. First, we're going to start with the laws so that people understand why we do what we do, or we're allowed to do or not allowed to do, whatever it is that we want to do for game management, specifically for animals. And then we're going to draft something smaller and in accordance with those laws. So we committed to that. We did not give a timeline, but we are working together with our county GMAC to get that done. All I got.
Any discussion, commissioners, questions for?
I guess this thing is a long thing, and it's actually, like Kanali mentioned, that kind of the genesis of this commission, because the DLNR has conflicting mandates to protect endangered species, native stuff, as well as try to figure out hunting with it. There is no guiding document that decides how you do that currently, and I feel one needs to be formed if you're going to keep non-native game species literally almost anywhere in the state. So I'm not. Admittedly, I've never read the plan because I was told it was like not a good use of my time, probably. But if it could be modified into some kind of document that guides policy making for something that is defined sustained yield areas or things like that, then that would be a pretty good intent for it, because it doesn't exist. And the other item as well that I'm here for also relates to that as well. So I think it affects anywhere there's an endangered species on every island, and I think it affects every single public hunting resource here, because without some kind of guiding way to move forward on how you keep game, the default management plan is eradication. So that's that. So, but I don't know a timeline in getting it done, because we've been at this for decades. So,
Bob, can you help ensure that the do it quickly and with your support?
Well, I can assure to give my support. I cannot assure that they're going to get it done quickly, because I'm not sure what all the problems are going to be. As you know, and I want to say something, Stanley, with you and Nancy as our leaders, and with some new members who are going to be up front, ask questions, but we move on. I am very hopeful that this edition of the Hawaii Game Management Commission will get some results. And I can assure you that I am very result-oriented. Okay. So I can hold Kanalo's feet to the fire.
That sounds good to hear.
And we just met all day Friday on the issues around Puuvaavao, which we're not going to discuss today, because it's a work in progress. Mm-hmm. It has been for 20 years. My goal is to get it done in the next two. So,
okay, sounds good.
Yeah, I can assure you of that.
Right on. any more discussion, commissioners? Okay, seeing none, we're open to public testimony. Anyone? Seeing none, let's move on to the next item, which is item 8.
Item 8, again, this is Jason Omek, DLNR Delphi. Agenda item is basically an update on hunting guides and reporting procedures. whatnot. In the past, I think people were having trouble looking for who are the hunting guides out there. If you go to our DOFA website under hunting and under becoming a hunting guide, you'll see the updated 2020 list of all the hunting guides in the state that have applied for a license. Kauai may not be on there quite yet, but all the other islands are on there. So their name, phone number, and you know, contact information is there. We've developed a new reporting form that it's also online too. There's discussion on the website that talks about if you don't turn in your report, you may not be able to get a license in the future or whatnot. So some information on that, and also the report's downloadable right there. I've given everyone a handout and emailed you guys a hunting guide handout. Just something to look at, and maybe we can have discussions in the future on how we manage our hunting guides, as far as fees and whatnot. This handout kind of talks about other states, what they charge, and some of the qualifications you need. Say, like, for first aid, you need to have first aid if you're going to be guiding people into the wilderness. Maybe these are some things that we need to adopt, and through discussion, maybe we can beef this up a little bit, possibly raise the fee. That fee needs to be listed in our rules, too, so we can do a quick rule change, possibly, to add that that number in there, so we're doing it legitimately. This guide is license is really meant for private lands. We know that people are doing this in public areas, possibly, and as we've heard from staff and you folks. So I think there needs to be some more information on where you can actually conduct these activities. I know forestry section right now is working on rules that are going to put in information for commercial activities and maybe provide a way to get a permit for commercial activities in a forest reserve. So right now, if someone's using a hunting guide license in a forest reserve and they're charging people for that, you know, that's not correct at the moment. And so I think next year when they have this permit available or this fee set in their rules, we can then refer to that and maybe make a dual permit to where we know if people are charging money,
commercial activity.
Yeah, it's a commercial activity, and you know. So I think there needs to be a little bit more discussion on, one, how much that permit's gonna be, and kind of just kind of a basic discussion on that. Go ahead.
Let him finish.
I'm waiting for you to finish.
Oh, I'm
just catching his attention.
That's pretty much it. So, we also did some legal research back into with our AG to kind of look at this whole scenario. And when we have maybe a 10-page write-up on legalities of this and what a court may decide and stuff like that. So, to get our ducks in a row, get that permit online, the fee decided on, post it in the rules, make sure that there's a reporting, that we're following reporting from each individual, and they can't get another permit unless they turn in their old report, and just making sure everyone knows where this permit's good for. And that's pretty much it. So it's been out there for a little while, and we kind of need to clean up shop with that activity.
Thanks, Jason. Okay, now you can go.
Mr. Chair, thank you. When I go like this, I'm not asking to drop it. The chairman, I'm going to have
I can see you. I can see you.
Right here next. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Right over here, bigger than you, so he's blocking you my way. I think on this kind of project, is there somebody from the Game Management Commission involved in your working group?
No, not right now.
It might be a good idea to invite somebody who has an interest in that particular kind of area, because if we're going to get hunting guide permits and stuff, or you know, you guys want to work on, do we have a professional guide standards thing?
No.
Well, then maybe we need to work on those kinds of things so that
Yeah, so in the handout, it kind of talks about what other states are asking of their guides. Mm-hmm. Most of the guide permits are not even administered by the state. Some of them are administered by an outfitter corporation or even Department of Labor and Industrial Relations. Some of them are fancy there. So for us, developing a set of criteria would be something.
The history of it is that it's a kind of a secondary thought kind of action.
Yes.
So what I'm trying to do by connecting the game management commissioners and getting them involved in your working group for these kinds of things is to have clear nexus of relationship between activity, professionals, experience, and the outcome of the guide, the law, the whatever.
Yeah, I understand.
So all of us, for our people, should take this as a big hint when you form working groups.
I know DOFA gives out the guide license. So who's supposed to actually enforce this? Non-licensed activities? Because Molokai, that's one of the biggest things happening in Molokai. Nowadays social media is everything. You go on Instagram, you go on Facebook, every other guy on Molokai is a professional guy. But the problem is there's no enforcement. And if there's no enforcement, the real big thing about that is safety. You know, you guys giving out guide license, they're going out there taking their hunters wherever, and somebody will get shot. Now, who that thing will come down onto? Probably the state, because you guys issuing guide license.
Also, we get the deepest pocket.
Exactly. So what? This requirements to become a guide, you guys got to make it a lot more stricter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd be willing to work with you guys.
And the fees got to be a lot more. So not any young kid right off of high school can pay you $25 and, okay, I'm a hunting guide.
You know, it sounds like you get a volunteer for this working.
Sounds like it.
I tell you, it's a real bad situation on Molokai. And that's the reason why I got involved. I got so much stuff on my plate right now, but because of this issue, somebody have to do something.
I think we can address all these items, and then the main thing to address is how is it going to be enforced, and that's something we need to bring DOCARE into this conversation and make sure they're aware.
Not only bring DOCARE in the conversation, you guys, the working group needs to come up with a proposed set of rules or laws. Either it's going to be a HRS kind of thing, a law, or change in the law, or it's going to be recommendations to make changes in rules or establish new rules, because the enforcement part has to be enforcing a rule or a law. They cannot enforce what I like.
Right.
They can enforce, we are a society of laws, yet, I think.
The only thing we can do right now as far as enforcement, DOFA, wildlife, would be, hey, you didn't turn in your report, you're not getting another license. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's completely acceptable at the moment.
And you guys can make recommendations, this working group can make recommendations for rules that establish fine levels. It's like without voting, it's very similar. The fines are so cheap, even with the commercial activity things. The illegal people that used to go take people off the mountain, one thing I'm glad that stopped for a while, because the amount of money people make and the illegal people don't even pay the cheap amount for a license. And then they get a fine, they're happy to write a check because the fine, $5,000-$10,000 is peanuts compared to what they make. And it's outrageous. So, thanks for volunteering.
You got it.
Okay, anyone else? Okay, at this time we're open to public testimony. Seeing that there's none, public testimony is closed. Moving on to the next item, number 9.
So,
Good morning, Chair, Vice Chair, Commission members, Andrew Choi from Hunter Education Program. So Deputy Masuda and Jason had asked me to provide an update on shooting range development on Kauai. And I'll just give a brief overview of where we're at, and I'd be happy to take any questions that you may have. So I know that the efforts have been ongoing for many years, 20 plus years on Kauai, similar to the Big Island. For much of that time, the preferred site was a location called Hanahanapuni, just I guess west, northwest of Kapa'a. And through more research on the site, we realized that there were concerns with access through ADC, Agribusiness Development Corporation lands, so easement access, and then also the use of the area itself, and then just the nature of that specific location being limited to support a full complement of shooting range venues. So basically in 2018 we contracted with PBR Hawaii to do another site selection study, blind GIS study, so going in without any bias, and basically just layering in features on GIS that would constrain sites. So, you know, no critical habitat, no wetlands, no historical sites, central location, et cetera, et cetera. And basically the pool of sites got smaller and smaller and smaller. And in our initial round of site selection, there were 8 locations. I think I'm just recalling from memory, about 7, maybe 6 or 7 of them were on private land. So that's already not a good starting place for us. Our preference is public land. So we did another site selection, kind of broadening our search criteria to smaller parcels. And another 8 or so sites were yielded. And once again, most of them were on private land. We went back to the drawing board, did a third round of site selection, and once again, it was the same thing. And in that third round, we basically limited to, you know, which sites could support at least one shooting range feature. So whether it was just a rifle range or just a handgun range or just a shotgun range. And basically, out of all of that, 2 sites came up that were the preferred sites, and both of which are on ADC land. And just, you know, for the fact of doing our due diligence, we just at the end of October, we did a 3-day planning workshop with our shooting range team. We had the county of Kauai involved, and we literally sat down in front of a computer, looked at TMKs, just all different state TMKs to see if there's anything we missed. We did an aerial survey over Kauai, flew over, you know, probably 2/3 of the island with the range architect on the helicopter to visually look at whether sites were feasible that we missed. And after all of that, we realized that it still remains site H and 8 ADC lands are the preferred sites. So I was able to meet with Mayor Kawakami and Pat Porter, Director of Parks and Rec with the county, and also Elton Ushio, the Kauai Emergency Management Administrator, who I understand is one of the mayor's designees for the shooting range effort. And basically, they understand and completely support our site selection study and the site selection results and are willing to assist in the conversations moving forward. And that's really where it's at right now, is just affecting that conversation with ADC on whether those sites are in fact on the table or not. Yeah. So I guess my concern was, the 2 things that I would just emphasize is that we, going into it, we had no bias for any particular site. And after just a very tedious site search, it's still ADC land. Even having the county officials on the helicopter physically looking at sites, unanimous that the sites that were yielded in that site selection study are the preferred sites. And that's where we're at right now.
Okay. Any discussion, questions, commissioners?
We just want the chair and the commission to know that the department stands solidly behind trying to get both shooting ranges on Kauai and the island of Hawaii, the Pu'anahulu one. We think the one on Saddle Road is kind of like a toy shooting range, so we like one real one. So we're getting the Pu'anahulu one cranked up again and going through because it's a major area and seems like a best site. And the Kauai one, we're supporting in every way we can, and I'm hopeful that Derek, Mayor Kawakami will jump in and help us because ADC is really the Agribusiness Development Corporation, but they're currently doing, seems like they're the Department of Ag's leasing agent in Kauai. So we need to work that out. We've engaged DHHL also, and based on Robert Kramer's recommendation on the hunting area on Kauai, that is a work in progress. We had it extended to the end of this year. We're going to either extend it again, or we're trying to find another area where we can exchange even. DHHL land is a very difficult process even for exchanging. It has to not only go through the state level, but it has to go all the way back to DC to the Secretary of the Interior's level for sign off, even for exchanging. Let's say state land with, right now I'm trying to exchange some of our land for some of the unused DHHL land up in the mountains so that we can get more house lots. But it takes a long time to go through. And I'm impatient as hell, but so this particular progress, I give Andrew and Sherry Mann, who's working with him on Kauai, our district DOFA agent, a lot of credit. And while Andrew's here, may I, for the record, congratulate both Nancy and Andrew for extremely successful outdoor women's, what do you call
becoming
it?
Outdoors women
becoming
program.
An outdoor women project. It was so successful that everybody's excited about them continuing. She volunteered for another 5 years.
Yeah, and I'll add to that. I mean, the effort was completely on Nancy. Hunter Ed was just, you know, provided administrative support. It was completely Nancy who did the coordinating and, you know, bled for it, and we're very grateful
for it.
It was an awesome event.
And we're hopeful that the commission will join in promoting and encouraging and supporting so that we get more women involved in some of these kinds of activities. One of my friends, fiance, went, and she's the administrative director for the judiciary, and she had nothing but big praise, getting exposed to everything from handling different handguns, rifles, fishing equipment, and what have you, bows.
Yeah.
So I awesome. Just wanted to add that for the record, because they're working hard.
Tolunai, next.
Well, you know. So all we need is some Kauai land.
You know, to me, women are better shooters than men. Yeah, my sister guys, oh boy. Anyway, any more questions?
Yeah, Chair, I just would add to, so one of the things to think about is when you look at data put out by the Shooting Sports Foundation and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the youth demographic, which is historically the gets the most resources from agencies, financial resources as far as outreach programs, the number of shooters, youth shooters, is declining. The number of youth participants is declining. Across the board, all the demographics are declining, mm-hmm. except the women demographic, which is seeing increases. Mm-hmm. And so that definitely, not only Hawaii, but nationally, at least in the hunter ed realm, is one demographic that a lot of states are putting their folk, that and minority groups.
On the youth hunt on Lanai, we got a lot of parents taking their girls out.
And that's the key, is that parent involvement.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Anyone else?
Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew.
All right.
Thank you. Okay, we'll open for public testimony. Seeing that there is none, public testimony is closed. At this time, we'll take a 7-minute break. Be back at 11:35.
Seven.
9 minutes. I don't know how to count.
9 minutes.
Close enough.
Yeah, close enough.
If you haven't signed in, please take time out.
Is it based on a guy's need or a woman's need?
What?
The 7 minutes.
Oh. Yeah.
You're from which island?
Maui.
Maui, okay. Where in Maui?
I live in Kahului.
Yes, I'm sure.